was, I did know what it meant, but at the moment, it just, I don't know why.
Was it out of place? That's probably what it was.
It was out, it didn't, like, there was no innuendo before it, so I was like, wait, what does it mean? And you both laughed at me, and then no one fucking told me. But my 17-year-old laughed at me, too, and she said, don't tell anybody. Well, I did. Because I was like, I'm an idiot, and no response from you. Fucking silence. I thought for sure I'd have gotten a laugh emoji, something.
So we have been having some crazy stuff going on here.
Okay.
I had a show on Saturday.
Yes.
Mabel had like a soccer game and then a birthday she had to go to. And then on Sunday, Julia and Mabel are going to go skating. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't say this out loud, is, oh, somebody's going to get hurt. But so they go. And then probably about an hour and 15 minutes into it, Julia texts me, Mabel's hurt. And I was like, what happened? And I was like, she fell down. She has a big old bruise on her face. And,
of course it's on her face.
Her hip hurts. Yeah, and it's pitcher week too this week.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So, and this is the second year she's managed to damage her face. So, you may not know this, but Julia is a hockey player.
Nuh-uh.
And you want to know how Mabel got hurt?
How?
She checked her.
Wait, what?
She checked her.
Checked who? Julia? Wait.
Mabel, she fell.
I love how Julia's in the background going, don't listen to him, he's lying.
So this is not the best part of the week. So then we wake up Monday morning when she's supposed to go to this school. And she can't see well out of one eye. So I take her to the doctor and she has a concussion. And so she doesn't go to school this week. And then she just started soccer like 2 weeks ago. So now she's out of soccer for 2 to 3 weeks, too, till her brain heals.
Yeah.
And her.
How did she get a concussion playing soccer?
She didn't. She was skating with her mom and her mom fell on her.
Oh, I'm so lost. It's all right. That's par for the course.
But anyway, and then on Wednesday.
Yeah.
My guitar fell and cracked the neck. Oh, I was so sad. I'm still sad, to be honest with you, because it's my favorite guitar.
It's like
my main guitar that I play with. So now Ray's trying to help me find someone to put her back together. But anytime you put them back together, they're not as good as they once were.
Had a rough week.
I had to explain it to my drummer. My drummer was like, not a big deal. And I was like, dude, this would be like if all your drums got cracked. Like in half.
Fucking he's like, drummers.
Oh, that's not good. Fucking drummers. Goddamn drummers.
That is
funny. It's okay. That's we don't okay. have to see you. It's not a visual podcast right yet.
Yeah, we'll just imagine what you look like.
There's at least a decent little icon there.
That'll work.
So it sounds okay here. Listen, my life is apparently in shambles and nothing works right now.
Okay, good. That's where we like you.
Nice.
I am going to do your intro. I want you to listen to it. Let me know if you're okay with it. If you're not, we'll just scrap it. But anyway, so I worked like many years on this. So, you know, this is going to be the best interview you've ever experienced in your life. Okay?
You got it.
All right, so here we go. Sporting a ball cap and a feline guitar strap from West Virginia, this artist has been featured everywhere from the Jewel City Barbershop to the Radio Artifact. In 2021, had a COVID-related illness, a massive perspective change led him to a specific focus. Focus on his life, his family, music, and adult beverages. Recently, his release, Let Me Know, garnered an Appy Award for Album of the Year. Let's welcome Corduroy Brown.
Hey, hey.
Ooh, hey.
I'm a big fan of ball caps and feline guitar straps.
I've seen the pictures.
Like, that would sum up pretty much my life.
I think your life is a little more complicated than that.
Probably.
You go ahead. You go ahead. I'm going to see all where right. you go.
Okay.
Because it's always fucking scary. But go ahead.
All right. Good. So I did a bunch of research on you. And so this first question is related to that. So would you tell us how your story and the Album of the Year award has changed your career so far?
Yeah, I mean, everyone always wants to talk about the, you know, me dying and coming back, which I think that's fair. You know, that's not everyone gets to do that.
Honestly, it's on my list. So, sorry.
Yeah. And I'm totally down when I say that. I mean, like, I'm down to talk about it, but it's almost like, you know, I talked about it so much and it's like, it's almost weird to continue to talk about it. Not because I'm not grateful, but just like, man, like I talk about it so calmly anymore. I don't get nightmares of dying over and over again. And I don't like have all this crazy pain and I'm not getting poked and needled and stabbed and hooked up to every machine anymore. It's kind of like, whoa, that happened. Like, it's not like, holy shit, that happened. It's like, whoa, man, that's crazy. But so I always, when I say that, I don't mean it as an ungrateful thing, but you know, when you're faced with mortality, man, and you look at things so differently. And I think we're just spoiled humans sometimes. If we have shelter and water and food consistently, like we're just so used to all the good things always being in our life that like we forget like how fragile life really is. So that's what that whole experience taught me, was like we get one time, well, two times on the earth for me at this point, but generally one time like to experience as much as you can. So why are we not running at everything we always wanted to do at like 50 billion miles per hour? Because this is all going to be gone. And that's really what it taught me more than anything. On top of that, we got a chance and won the Appalachian Album of the Year, which is just beyond an honor. And we put our heart and souls into that album. And that was the album that almost didn't come out. You know, they were talking about releasing that album if I died, and I was trending that way. Arlo McKinley's on there and a bunch of people are on the album too. So like so many people's hearts and souls and bodies and minds and sweat and tears touched that album that I mean, I can't imagine like that album not being out. I don't know. I mean, they were still going to put it out if I died, and I don't know. I'm just grateful for all of that.
That's kind of, I don't want to say funny, but it kind of makes me laugh, you know, because think about it. Just follow me, people.
Okay.
Yeah, you've done all this work on an album and you're now in the final stages of mixing and mastering, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get really sick. So then everyone's going, well, you know, if he doesn't make it, we're going to release this anyway. So yeah. It's just kind of like, hello, I think there are some other things that we need to be focused on. Like, yeah, maybe I'm going to stay. Maybe this is just a big joke on all y'all guys or something. But the interview I did see, though, you were talking about it, how you were able to include a lot of people on the album that you liked. And so I think that's just really awesome, too, that you're able to incorporate so many other people in your album. So I think that's cool. We pretty much know how COVID affected your life and has garnered you a lot of attention. But Album of the Year, that's a big thing. Has that actually started kicking up your career? Like, are you not like, is George Strait opening for you, or, you know, I mean, have you seen that kind of twist yet?
I mean, not George Strait per se, but I will, you know, might as well be Beyonce at this point. But it's not like, and I don't say this arrogantly, like I always like try to preface everything as like, I'm really proud of what we're doing, but I feel like it finally, like that was something that like, you know, people may have heard of me, but then now they're like, oh shit, that's Corduroy. Like he's been putting in work. Like, it's kind of like the whole meme of like, put some respect on my name. Like, the whole Birdman meme. I don't know if you guys are talking, know what I'm talking about with the Breakfast Club, but anyway, there's like a rapper that came into the studio and they were like, put some respect on my name, homeboy. Like, it's kind of how I felt after that in a way. Oh, like, yeah, we know Corduroy Brown, but that, like, that's Corduroy Brown. Like, and I say that with like complete like gratitude too. It's really allowed more people to realize like, oh shoot. Yeah. Like he's one thing I'm really proud of, honestly, is we're doing like kind of the non-traditional, what you would say, Appalachian music. And I'm not dogging like banjos, mandolins and guitars and acoustic stuff, 'cause I love that. I love playing banjo and different instruments like that, traditional Appalachian sounds, but we're doing something that no one else is really doing in Huntington, West Virginia, or, you know, in Appalachia really at all, the kind of indie flavor. And I think it was just nice to be recognized for that. Like, oh crap, like there's another guy, but he's not just doing acoustic guitar songs, you know, out in the woods screaming about stuff. Like, there's some pride in that. And it's like, man, this is, I'm doing this. There's not another person that sounds like Corduroy Brown right now.
Before this album, you were a good artist. You know, whether anyone, you feel anyone recognized it or not, you were a good artist before this album. So before album of the year, you were a good artist. I want you to, I know sometimes of being a musician, you know, if you feel like you're just walked on, like you're mad or something sometimes.
Yeah.
But you're good before this album. This album is just one more thing to, one more notch to put on your bedpost or whatever you put your notches on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you should be proud of not only what has happened here, but your path to get to here as far as musically and stuff like that. Because you have a very unique sound. Well, unique may not be the right word, but you... But it worked for me because it, if you're comparing it to the style that's going on in West Virginia, it's definitely different. But you're pulling in a bunch of different genres, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, what I love, because people, the question you get more than anything, and maybe you guys can answer this, is like, well, what kind of music do you play? And that's like the worst question ever, because it's like, well, I don't know. It's just my music. But what I tell people, because it's so much easier to digest, I think, is like, we do like a 90s, 2000s feel good, like roll your windows down kind of thing. And it's just nice to be doing that. I mean, that's what the music I grew up on, you know, Hootie, Goo Goo Dolls, freaking Sugar Ray, any of those cats. Like,
God, Sugar Ray.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, like, and don't get me wrong, I was listening to tapes of Michael Jackson. I was bumping Christina Aguilera because I'm team Christina over Britney any day. I mean, NSYNC, like, any, I mean, I'm 90s kid here all the way. So it only makes sense that it kind of comes out in the music, too.
No, I can actually hear it in your songs, and I think it sounds great. I'm looking forward to getting into the songs if Renell doesn't have anything that she wants to talk about. Familiar Faces. So this song is awesome. It's up-tempo song with a great guitar intro. It almost, the tone of the guitars and how the attack is really reminds me of the Foo Fighters. Great lead and backing vocals. Cool breakdown leading to the solo. You had another breakdown at the end, but the breakdown before you go into the solo is awesome. So here's my question on this song. Did you play the solo?
Ooh, I did not play it on that one. That was the one that I did not play.
Okay, so can I ask my follow-up question then? Okay. Why not? I know you could take it, dude. I know you could have just killed it, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. But, you know, again, the whole album is called Let Me Know. And that means, you know, everyone in my entire life. The reason I didn't play it is it fits with the theme, honestly. Like there were so many people that I had on the album, and there's so many hidden little things. Like, let me tell you a little deep secret about that song. So if you listen to the breakdown, because it sounds like you've done some homework, which is nice. The breakdown, you hear those voices in the background, like kind of those muffled, like kind of joined together voices, like in the breakdown. That's actually me and my friend Jeffrey reading one of our best friend's tweets, because he's like a legendary, like, he's just the most hilarious guy. But he was like someone who watched me when I was a little kid, and I like looked up to him my whole entire life. So I was like, he doesn't play any musical instruments. How can I get him on the album? So we literally read some of his like most infamous tweets that we were just cracking up and then blending them all together. So if that tells you anything, like, there's so many hidden little like pieces of so many different people in the album, that whether they came and just played the rhythm guitar on one chorus, or they did this or whatever, like, there's so many hands on the album. So that album at the time was done by a guy named Noah Freeman, and he is an absolute freak on a guitar. And I was playing in a country band at the time with another group, and he was like lead guitar for them. And I was like, dude, I wonder if Noah would freaking just go crazy on this. And he did. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not touching that. Like, that's too good. So, yeah, I mean, but that, if you think about it, maybe I could have played it, but it wouldn't have made sense for the whole let me know idea. It was like, all these people have been so good to me. Like, I'm including as many people as I can.
No, I don't want to say he didn't do a good solo, because anytime I hear a good solo, I'm like, fuck yeah.
That's Brent's favorite thing.
I love guitars and guitar solos.
That's his
and
favorite thing.
You know, but yeah, it was a great solo, but I was just like, because I couldn't tell for certain. Each guitarist has a certain type of tone when they play.
Mm-hmm.
The effects on the guitar kind of made it to where I was unsure if it was you or not. Does that make any sense?
I'm just fascinated that you can tell the difference between us already. Like, man, like that blows me away.
Well, you have more than you have more than one song. You
know? Yeah.
You have a lot of songs that I've heard. So
is it fair to say that Uncle Brent is a fan?
I'm going to say he's definitely a fan.
Yeah. And I like you a lot. You know, you have a good story. Of course you do. I'm glad you got through that. But I think there's more to you than just that one part of your story. And so your music is a light into that. So I'm going to let Ronell talk now. I, It's fine. So speaking of that, how long have you been playing and how long have you been writing?
So my mom got me an acoustic guitar. It was a Fender CD60 model in 2008. And it was Christmas of 2007. And, you know, I'd grown up in church my entire life. You know, from if you were a little kid, your butt was getting up and you were going to church every Sunday morning. So I'd always been around church music and I always would find myself like dissecting it and listening to the harmonies, even as a little kid, like even if I didn't know what it was, like it was just what I did. But so I was always sort of musical, but no one in my family's musical. They don't sing, they don't play. Like no one, maybe I think my grandma on my mom's side like played piano or something, but that's it. But I never even knew her. But 2008, I started playing guitar. There's like so many kids that would bring their guitars to school, and I was like, oh man, I want to do that. And then I was playing sports, and I was like, man, this is so much nicer than running on the track in 97 degree weather. I can play guitar and have fun and not freaking, you know, go crazy sweating.
Especially in the southern humidity. Hard pass.
Yeah, listen, it is. We get all seasons very hard in West Virginia. But yeah, I mean, 2008 was probably when I first started playing guitar. I started learning like church songs. So I was still like heavy into playing the church and stuff. And but I started songwriting, I mean, probably in, 2012 or 2013. But really, one of my first serious bands that I was in called The Dividends, and it was like kind of an Amy Winehouse flavor. And we were writing songs in that and got to travel and play quite a bit with that. But I don't know, sometime in that range, probably songwriting started.
So in this album, like you talked about, there's a lot of like what my kid calls Easter eggs when she's talking about like video games.
Easter eggs, yes, yes.
There's a lot of little Easter eggs. There also seems like there was a lot of co-writing. What was the best part of that? And what was the hardest part of that?
Well, the best part is always the collaboration. It's like my brain is sometimes stuck in boxes that I'm like, okay, that's the way the song should be. And then like you let someone else on it and you're like, oh my God, like that's so genius. Like that's my favorite part. That's probably the best part for me is collaboration is, and it almost gets me in trouble sometimes because it took us so long to finish that album because we had so many different hands on it. And it's like, okay, come on. But at the same time, like I'm grateful for that. These songs come to life and there's just certain flavors and just certain little like you said, the Easter eggs and stuff, but
there's tons.
There really are. And I'm trying to think now I'm like losing it. Like there's on the song I Know Better, like you can hear us talking in the beginning of it. And that's a whole song about like, man, like I don't have my guard down. I was like recently hurt in a bad relationship ending. And I'm like really kind of resentful to like dating or any emotional relationships at all. And you can hear me and the producer of the album, Jeffrey McClellan, talking. And you can hear the metronome going off in the back. And we didn't realize what picked it up. It wasn't one of the microphones. It was the pickups were so hot on the guitar that it hurt us talking. And we kept it. And we were just having a genuine conversation about like, dude, I just wish I wasn't like this. Like, I just... like, you know, you can hear me saying like, now I guess she knows if this song comes out, she'll know where I'm coming from. And then he goes, can I interrupt? And we kept it. And it's so muffled and it's so like, we didn't even mean for it to be recorded. But if you listen to the front of I Know Better, like that's what I'm talking about. There's so many hidden little things that just happened over time.
Well, let's talk about that song a little more because I really like that song. And I really liked the line, I'm in and out of time and space. There's nowhere to hide. Now that you said what that song is about, it makes a lot of sense to me. That was my favorite one personally. Maybe that's why I really like the lyrics. Is that you on lead in that one?
In the I Know Better one? I did play lead on I Know Better, yeah.
Okay.
So this was like a kind of a mellow song. I mean, especially at the intro. You know, the intro is longer than most intros. Most intros are normally about 13 to 16 seconds. This one was 22 seconds.
Damn, Brent.
I love this. I'm freaking out right now. I'm nerding out.
I just picked up on it. It was an accident, too. I was like, this is going a little bit longer than it should. But anyway, not that it was bad. I just picked up on it. So this song just, I really zeroed in on, and this is a compliment. It kind of had a feel of the Counting Crows. And then in the verse, Love Fool by the Cardigans. The verse of the Cardigans, Love Fool, but it sounds like your chorus of I Know Better. They're very similar. But you don't sing it like her, of course, because you're like 12 octaves below her. But but it's crazy. I mean, and the Counting Crows thing is probably more of a tone thing, But I was shocked at how you went into the chorus, and I was like, that is similar. And that's like a cool song, the Cardigans Love School.
Yeah,
that's
just a
great song. My favorite lyrics on this song are those idle words, the one you thought you'd never serve, those knives and blades, things you thought you'd never face, mistakes you've made, throw them all away. I thought that was a great, just great lyric. So here's my question. In this song, you reference your dad. So my question is, does your dad know you're talking about him?
He does. And it's not in a bad way.
No, I didn't think it was in a bad way. I was just kind of giving you, you know, like, does your dad know? Because I'm a writer, too. And so when I'm always writing, people that know me are like, is that me? You know, but you just come out and say my dad or my father. You know what I'm saying? You just come out and say it.
Yeah. He's notorious for like knowing how to fix everything. Like he's a very kind of stoic, like if you don't know him, you might think he doesn't like you, but he's just a very like laid back, observant, kind of chill person. But he's like one of those dads that is just like able, he just knows everything about everything somehow. And that's kind of like the reference. I'm talking about like fixing things, wanting to fix this relationship or myself or whomever in that song. That's just like my dad. Like he just knows how to fix everything. And it was kind of like a plea to myself. Like, I'm trying to fix this. I'm trying to not be so resentful to relationships, because the song is all about like, listen, I'm going to let you in at about an arm's length. And that's the only version that I'm going to give away of myself, because I was so hurt from that relationship. And even, you know, that song, that relationship that I keep talking about was like ended in 2017. And I think I wrote that song in 2020. And it took me that long. So I spent 3 years just like building walls up. You know, that's what the chorus is, you know, build the walls up, watch them fall again, like attempting to like shovel myself away from somebody. And then like they'll break the walls down. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Let me build the walls back up. And that's kind of the reference to him, was like not in a relationship stance or anything, but just like, man, he fixes and builds. And like, I just felt like I was maybe like him, like in some weird messed up way.
It seemed like you were striving to be more like him.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and I really think, I think for your dad, I mean, if he hasn't heard the song, first of all, what's your dad's name?
His name's Chuck. He's heard Chuck, a lot.
Chuck.
He's heard it a lot.
Chuck, you need to go listen to that song, and just your son is saying a really wonderful thing about you as a father, or even a person, you know, beyond being a father, a person. So, but anyway, so I thought that was real neat from a relational standpoint. You're struggling with something and you're looking at your dad and look at how he manages stuff, and you're trying to embody the good parts of him so you can get through what you're going through. I thought that was awesome.
Oh yeah. That's, I mean, you nailed it right on. I've actually never thought about that song as in depth of that, but, and it's weird because we don't play that song live and we've kind of been wanting to bring it back. So this may be the sign to, maybe it's time to do it now.
I know this is the cheesy question that everybody asks, but with your sound and you being from, you know, Appalachia, I thought it would be interesting. It's something I've tried to steer away from, but I'm going to bring it back for this. Who are your songwriting inspirations?
God, that's
so curious. I'm real curious because of where you're from, because of because it's different. It's not going to be all radio stuff. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, like when I hear songs like now, even for as long as I've been writing, like I've always wanted to write like Alex Turner from Arctic Monkeys, the way that he's a wordsmith and a half. And on top of that, like there's a Canadian synth pop girl named Lights. And that's who I wish I could write like is those two, like Alex Turner and Lights from Canada. But I don't know. I mean, like, I was thinking, like, I started listening to Reliant K again. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Reliant K, but and I noticed, like, man, like, I feel like I write like them because that used to be, that's like what I grew up on. But I also grew up on, again, like tapes of Michael Jackson. I grew up listening to Flyleaf and Paramore. Still listen to a lot of Paramore.
Flyleaf. Oh man.
Yeah, I listened. Front to back for Flyleaf's first two albums, could play them note for note on guitar, and that was like what cut my teeth on any kind of guitar lesson. That's what I really started playing with, anything in drop D and below. Flyleaf, I knew front to back both albums. So I don't write anything that heavy now, but I was in my bedroom chugging the guitars. But I don't know. I don't even remember the question at this point, but there's just so many. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I like your honesty. It makes me happy.
I want to write like so many people. Like it's almost awful when I'm like, I'll listen to a song and start recording it. And then I'm like, oh man, but that one guy's song sounds like this. And I love her song and how she does this. And it's like, you kind of got to pick a lane here sometime, brother. Like you got to, I don't know.
Don't pick a lane, because whatever you're doing, it's fine.
Thank you.
And the way that you're bringing other things in and you're like, fuck a lane, I'm building a dirt road, I'm just going to go my own way. Now that song's going to be stuck in my head all night. Now, I've seen some live stuff on TikTok. Me and Brent have both seen a few live things on YouTube. So I have one really specific question after this question. What does a show look like? What is a Corduroy Brown show like?
Ooh, good question, actually. I love interacting with the crowd. I talk too much, as like I told you guys. So I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, shut up. But we recently did a show with one of my favorite bands, Houndmouth, and it was in front of 1,400 people. And I brought candy corn on the stage. And in between every song, I just ate candy corn. I didn't say a word. I just ate candy corn.
Like on TikTok, it was like me and candy corn.
Yes, yes. And so there's like quirky, fun moments, but I kind of make it all like, I don't want to say a church sermon, but I want to entertain. That's the goal. You know, I want everyone to be able to forget about for that 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it is. I want us all to be on that same wavelength. And I want everyone to just like not have to think. Let me just take control. Let me just have fun with you guys. Let's go on a journey together. But in between that journey, I always make time for some introspectiveness. And if that's a word, but I always, you know, almost to a T in at the end of one of our songs at the end of the set called To My Younger Self, I make the crowd, I say, if you guys will hang with me for just one more song, I need you to turn to the person that's next to you and say, hey, I appreciate you. And the reason I do that is because most likely that's the first time that that person's heard that today, or that's the first time that they've told someone, or any, just in general sense, it's like, that's probably the first time you've heard that you're appreciated today. And that's the whole idea, is if there's longer sets, I'll go on story time and talk about, you know, Lord, this freaking life is fragile. Like, please do not take it for granted. Like, we have food and we have people around us and we have lungs that work and legs that move and a heart that beats. Like, I can go into some kind of big story mode sometimes, but I want to entertain and I want to make sure that people know, like, yo, let's appreciate the moment. Let's be more present in everything we do.
So the thing that I saw live, and I bet Brent saw it too, that made me just laugh and it made me want to go to your show, was when you covered a Miley Cyrus song complete with a wig.
Yes.
That looked like it was so much fun and everybody in that audience was into it. Do you do that often or things like that often?
We try to throw curveballs in there as much as
that was a good one. You should do that again. That was hilarious.
We've played the Miley song a couple times. When we were in Lexington with Houndmouth recently, we did a Britney Spears song just to come out of nowhere with it. Because it's funny to see people's reactions, because it's like you know, we're all jamming. They're like feel good indie stuff. And we do some covers. Like we do the I Think I Like When It Rains song, like, which is kind of like in our vibe. But then we'll hit them with a Britney Spears or a Miley. And you can just see everyone like, holy shit, what? Like, it's just a big bearded black guy up there singing Britney Spears song. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, so, yeah, we try to just throw some curveballs because I think you have to do covers. Like, I think it's there's nothing like a good cover. I mean, like, you know, unless you're I don't know who would not have to do covers, the Beatles or Paul McCartney. Like, he's not going to cover shit. Like,
yeah, but covers are why you started playing. If you think about it, the first few albums of the Rolling Stones, all covers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you do covers because that is what tweaked you. It's why you listen to music, those covers. And so, you know, I know a lot of hardcore songwriters want to get away from doing other people's songs, but for me, it's fun to do covers when I'm live because people already know the lyrics and they can sing along with you.
Yeah, they get into it because it's familiar.
It's a great, like, I mean, and not to sound like a manipulative, like, weird guy saying this, maybe it doesn't, but, like, if you can feel the crowd zoning out, it's the perfect way to get them, like, reeled back in and be like, all right, hey, let's not forget where we're at.
You're watching me.
Yes, pay attention.
What is your favorite cover song to play?
It depends on where, because like if there's like an older crowd, if we're doing like a city concert event thing where people are out there in lawn chairs, there's a song called Poison Ivy by the Coasters, which is like back in the 50s. And it's real, real retro, you know, whatever. And I really love doing that. But honestly,
man, we do a version of Bright Lights by Gary Clark Jr. And I freaking love that song. It's so good. Real kind of bluesy and it goes pretty hard.
Nice. That made Brent smile. I've never asked Brent that question. Brent, what's your favorite song to do live? The cover live?
Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Ooh.
Oh, that is good. That is a good one when you do that. Nice.
Nice.
It's fun because I'm old, fat, white guy and no one's expecting it. Old, fat, bald, white guy with no dance moves at all, man.
Amazing.
Let's talk about Who I Am Now.
Yeah.
Tell me about that song.
That is my favorite song I've written to this day. And
it's a good video, by the way. Just side note.
Thank you. Thank you. That was shot by one of my friends named Caden Tooley. He does stuff for like with King and Country and travels. I mean, he's like all over the freaking country now, but yeah, the song Who I Am For Now was written again back in 2017 and I didn't get finished until we were about to like put it on the album. And, the first lyrics talk about pacing the floor. And again, that's one of those relationships. It's weird. Cause that it's a relationship ending song. There's several songs on the album that really, man, that relationship apparently did a number on me, but it's weird because when we play that song now, it's like I don't feel attached to anything except for the end of that song now where I talk about being a husband again. But the beginning of the song is all about like the floor in the house that we were in living together. The foundation was messed up. So that's why I say literally, you know, my foundation falling down. But I'm also talking about like the foundation of everything I thought that I was going to be with forever was also ending too. So there's kind of like a double meaning behind that. But my favorite lyric to this day, I think, is I spent every little moment confusing all my nothings with who I am for now. And that, I don't know, just like you get stuck in these like waves where like all you can do is just see red and all you can do is just see the moment and you can't see outside of 10 minutes ahead and you think that that's all there is. And if you were just to look outside of that, there's so much more life and there's so much to appreciate and so many people that appreciate you. And that to this day is probably my favorite song. And I hope that I don't have to say that for much longer when we get new music out, but that's still, that one's special to me.
I like that song. This is a good song. This may throw you off. So I really like the nice poppy vocal tone you have in this song, but the guitar part in the verse reminded me of the band 1975 feel.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh, I hear those little riffs. Cause I think it's like two guitars kind of creating the guitar part during the verse. And one's really kind of clean and it's playing like a more of a disco kind of feel or a funk feel. Video, just totally fun. The paint fight, I've always wanted to do that. So jealous.
Blast.
So here's my question. How many songs have you written on the toilet? Because there's a picture of you writing a song on a toilet.
That's funny. Well, gosh, probably too many. Because there's my phone so full of ideas that like, so, okay, here's something funny too, is that like when I had an apartment in 2019, 2020, and I didn't pay for water at the apartment. So I was just like a seal. I would just sometimes just sit in the bathroom and steam. Like, that's just how I felt. That's how I like turned down the night. Like, I was just like, all right, I'm just going to go steam for a little bit. And I didn't pay for water. So I was just like literally a land seal in there, just steamed out. Like, so there's probably so many song ideas that are just in my phone. I'm pretty sure in like one of the rough drafts of that song that I sent to the producer. Yeah, I guarantee it. Cause you could hear the water running in the background. It's like, are you the bathroom? I was like, yes. So we actually, yes, no joke, if I send song ideas to the band or whatever, like 99 times out of 100, you'll hear the water running in the background. And not so much now because I'm paying for my own water, obviously. But back then, you could just hear, you know, the water and stuff.
With the price of rent, if they give you no water bill, live in the shower.
I'm not kidding, an actual seal. I mean, it was not a Navy SEAL, like a freaking sea lion. Like,
yeah,
it was. Yeah, but there's a lot of songs on there. And I guess, you know, it's funny, when we recorded that, we used a type of bathroom reverb too, to record the ending of the vocals. Like, it literally was a bathroom reverb.
That's amazing.
That is funny.
Paying ode to that.
There's a lot of bathroom songwriting that you do, right?
There's been quite a bit. I don't know about now, but the most recent one. No, I mean, I'm just not paying for water anymore, or I'm paying for water now, so I can't. The songs I've been writing most recently, it will be like, if I cannot sleep, it'll be 3 a.m, and I'm just like, ooh, that's why I can't sleep right now. And I'll come up with some ideas generally too early and then hopefully record them so I don't lose them.
Pacing the floor that falls around me. My feet, they fall and stumble. My foundation falling down. And I spend every little moment confusing all my nothings with who I am for now. Say now, I've been on the way out. Don't know what to say now. It's not easy. I don't feel the things that I felt anymore. And I won't dare just to hang my head. You know I can. My hands are tied. Be
that I had learned to hold. And one day, I'm sure to be a husband to a wife that truly loves me, and a house we'll call a home.
Do you have any shows coming up after the 9th of October?
The 9th of October, we're really winding down. There's several things in November, or actually only a couple things in November. One's in Indiana. One's like a charity back here at home. And then we take quite a large gap until December 15th, where we play with Charles Wesley Godwin in Morgantown, which is going to be crazy. That sold out 1,400 seats in like less than 3 minutes.
You're playing to pretty large crowds. What does that feel like?
It's not as often as you'd think. I mean, we're still.
I don't know. You sound like it. You were like, oh, and this last time it was like, does it just not feel real?
It's hit or miss. I mean, because we're not a big band. Like, we're just now getting our toes wet. We're the smallest drop of water in a giant bucket of music. And we've had some incredible shows and incredible featured shows this year, and it's been I truly can't even believe it. Like, it's just unreal sometimes, but like, when it's amazing like that, when it's sold out, it's just like, holy crap, like, this is, it's just, there's nothing like it. I mean, because everything you do is just right somehow. I don't know, like, I took my hat off in a song and the crowd cheered and I was like, what? Like, what are we cheered about? Just showed my bald head. But I don't ever take it for granted though, and I'm joking about it, but it's just like, man, when those shows are that big, and it's just, God, it's like, it's almost like scary, because you get this massive serotonin high.
Yeah.
And for those 48 hours, even after that, then there's a giant crash. And especially if you have a bad show the next day, you're like, why are we even doing this? Then you have another good show and you're like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I want to do this forever. And then you're like, man, like, what are we doing? Like, it's kind of emotional abuse sometimes that you self-inflict.
You're like, are you guys like masochists? Is that what it feels like?
I think every musician is to some extent.
We are. Yeah, that's like, true. Hey, Brent, has anybody ever cheered when you took off your baseball hat and showed your bald head?
No, no one's ever cheered, but I did.
I will now, just to be an asshole.
I did get to play in front of 2,000 people once. And when they yell, you can literally feel the sound hitting your chest. And that's, if you're not used to it, it scares the pee out of you. But if you're used to it, it's got to be a real cool feeling, because I was just like, oh my gosh, there's so much sound. I mean, they were almost louder than the band I was playing in. But anyway, yeah, the crowd was. It's just insane when you get, you know, when more than your mom's there, which is usually who I play for. but when you get that crowd, it's just insane. And
where can people buy your music and where can people buy your merch?
So the weirdest thing is that people spell corduroy wrong, and I don't understand it.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I went to public school and only have a GED, and I struggled with it.
It's okay. I'm going to help you out big time right now. Okay, and I do this at every show. So
do it.
If you break it up into three syllables, corduroy, if you think of it like that, it'll change your life. And it's become a thing at shows where people are like yelling stuff like, how do you spell corduroy? Because they know I'm about to give them a whole spelling lesson. But if you think of it in three syllables, it's cord, the letter U, and roy. There's no H on cord. I don't know why people do that. But that's the best way to remember it. So if you just look up Corduroy Brown WV, that's going to take you literally everywhere. There is merch available. I don't have any vinyls or any physical copies of anything, but I figure most people are streaming nowadays. But next album will be another vinyl, or a vinyl finally. Corduroy Brown WV, that is literally the ticket to everything that exists. Website, Facebook, Instagram, don't have Twitter, don't have Bumble, don't have OnlyFans, don't have any of that.
kicked.
I know. I hate how it says that. Like, is there another fucking phrase? What is that?
You're so mean.
I hate that Skype says that. That's awful. Kicked
him out.
You're I did not. He left that first.
Not nice. God.
All right, Brent, you want to wrap this up?
Thank y'all for coming out tonight. And, well, you didn't really actually come out tonight. Again. I went into show mode. I went into show. I was like
countdown and everything.
Hey, this is your Uncle Brent. Thanks for coming out tonight and enjoying the show. All right. Thank you for listening tonight. That was Quarter War Brown. His stuff is available everywhere. He's a great up and coming, I guess, indie artist, but he has a bunch of different influences and makes him actually larger than that. So he's looking for fans. Y'all guys are available. We appreciate y'all for coming and spending some time with us because we know your time is important and we're glad that you come by and hang out with us. Another thing we'd like you to do is you're spending time with us. So that means we provide some type of value in your life. If we make you laugh, we make you cry, we piss you off, whatever it is we do, we share it with the people you love or the people you don't like, because either way, we can probably hit some nerves and help some people or make their lives harder, whatever y'all guys want to do.
Please like, follow, subscribe, download, and share the Sound Pollution Podcast. We could really use your help. We have gotten a lot of great artists on. I mean, since it started, but I mean, that's how I got Brent. I say that like I adopted him from a shelter. That's how I got Brent, but we know we could be going farther than we are now. So we do need your help. We do need you to like, follow, subscribe, download, and share. If you're on TikTok and you see me having coffee in the morning and the song that's playing is the recent artist and there's a link, dude, click the link, share it, repost it. I think we have a great show. I mean, I know there's a lot of other podcasts. It's like a sea. It's like a whirlwind of podcasts. But we provide something kind of special to the independent music world. We would like your help. If you want to be on the show, please contact us at soundpollutionpodcast@gmail.com.
All right. So y'all get out there and remember to
make some.